Federal prosecutors filed criminal charges accusing a New York company of exposing the U.S. government and others to security risks by illegally selling surveillance equipment from China. Federal agents on Thursday outlined an alleged scheme by Aventura Technologies to import the Chinese goods, label them made in the USA, and sell them around the world to unwitting clients, including the U.S. military.
Sales falling and profits wiped out. There was little sign of relief Thursday for British luxury car maker Aston Martin. But a saviour could be roaring down the track. The fourth quarter will see Aston debut its first SUV, dubbed the DBX. There are hopes it will multiply the brand sales, with demand for such cars rising strongly. Aston hopes to emulate the success of rival Porsche. Known as a sports car maker, it actually makes most of its money from off-roaders.
Theme parks and a remake of The Lion King boosted Disney's quarterly earnings on Thursday, beating Wall Street expectations. The company's earnings arrived just days before its streaming service, Disney Plus, is set to launch as it attempts to become a powerhouse in a market dominated by Netflix. But it hasn't come cheap, with investments to build streaming media services increasing from a year earlier.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's November the 8th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway here on the program today. It's all about you and your money. Paul Nolte's here today from Kingsview in Chicago. Paul's an SVP portfolio manager there, and he's kind enough to come here every Friday to share his wisdom on investments and money with us. He'll be here for the full hour today. We'll take your calls and questions as well for Paul as we get underway here. We'll bring Paul in momentarily, but you can get your calls and texts lined up at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We will begin first, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look at futures, which are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street this morning. The trade optimism apparently fizzling out over the last few days. So Dow futures are just negative fractionally this morning. Same story at S&P and NASDAQ as we look to the opening bell at 8:30 this morning. Markets in Europe are generally in the red as well. In London, off by nearly a quarter of a percent. In Germany, off by nearly a quarter of a percent. In France, off fractionally. And the trading day coming to an end in Asia, mixed day there as well, with numbers out of Japan higher, everything else is lower. In Hong Kong, off by nearly three-quarters of a percent. The Hang Seng down nearly 196 points, and China off nearly a half a percent. Oil is trading in the U.S. at $56.28 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. They all have to deal with the holidays. Target getting a jump on the holiday season with Holideals, a two-day Black Friday preview sale that kicks off today. Target's getting a lot of buzz from this over the last few days, so it may be a public relations success for them. Deals on everything from gift cards to electronics. The retail chain says there will be four times the deals offered last year. Of course, a number of different retailers are trying to figure out ways to make up for the lost days this year. Thanksgiving is the latest it can possibly be, which means fewer shopping days for Christmas. Speaking of that, most people plan on spending at least as much as they did last year during this holiday season. Survey conducted by the Conference Board by Nielsen indicates 67% of consumers expect to spend the same as last year, while 10% plan to spend more. The average purchase will be about $627. And leave it to Alexa to control your Christmas tree. Amazon is selling a voice-activated 7-foot LED tree dubbed Mr. Christmas. It connects to the Alexa device so you can turn it on or off, set a schedule, and even switch up the lighting color all by command. Tree sells for about $300, but apparently is so popular it is now already out of stock. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview in Chicago. Paul, I bet you've already got one of those Alexa trees set up in your house, don't you? You seem like a holiday guy.
I try to stay far, far away from Alexa. I really don't like the intrusion into all things in my household.
Yeah. Well, good morning. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
What is the big economic news of the week, do you think?
You know, it's really from an economic perspective, this was kind of a quiet week. We get the economic dump usually right at the beginning, and we got that last Friday with the employment numbers, et cetera. We'll get next week, we'll get the inflation numbers, and those are kind of the two key data points that we take a look at over the course of a month. But one of the ones that we do look at is the ISM, the supply management surveys, manufacturing and the service side. Manufacturing was a little bit better, services a little bit worse, but certainly not anything to be worried about. But it continues that dichotomy between manufacturing and services. Manufacturing below 50, which indicates it's in contraction, has been that way for a while. That's been that way for international. But services have been still in an expansion. And services comprise 75-80% of the U.S. economy. So part of the reason why GDP, at least at this point, should be still about 1-1.5% for the fourth quarter.
I keep hearing analysts say the consumers are driving this economy. Is that still the case?
It is. They've backed off a little bit, so they're using a little less on the credit card. Their consumer confidence numbers that were out this week were a little less ebullient, and so people are maybe backing off a little bit here. Not anything to worry about just yet, but just the fact that it's turned lower has got everybody's attention. But the one that we looked at was credit card debt, and that usage is down a little bit, which is, you know, good for individuals probably saving a little bit more. But if you're looking at it from an economic perspective and growth, people have kind of pulled back on spending a little.
I am very close to ordering Dow 28,000 hats. Is that something that I should do sooner than later?
Yeah, we missed out on the 3,000 S&P hats, and we're already at almost 3,100. There is momentum behind the market at this point, and a lot of it is due to the thought that we just might this time for sure have a trade deal. And so there is some of that expectation. We're also in the best part of the year for the markets, from November to April, generally the best part of the year for the markets. We're coming up to an election. You may have heard about that.
Yes, I did.
And typically, the incumbent party wants to have things as good as possible. So we've got very easy monetary policy. You know, there's been a fair amount of spending that's been going on from the federal government as well to keep the economy going. Because going back to James Carville for Bill Clinton, it is the economy. And as long as the economy is doing well, that generally spells good things for the incumbent party.
Paul, we recently on the program talked about FAFSA season, which is what a lot of parents started doing back in October to get ready, parents and kids, to get ready for financial aid, filing all of the paperwork and forms to get in the hunt for financial aid. And you've been looking at this as well, and this is something that I don't think a lot of people think of, are the tax implications of paying for college and helping your kids out in this area. What have you found?
Well, there's a lot of things that you can do. Certainly, there's a 529 plan. There's educational IRAs. There's a cover called a Coverdell. You can put money into a custodial account for your child, or you can just put it in your own account and not do any of those things. There's a lot of different tax implications. So the Coverdell is like an IRA account, and you can put up to $2,500 a year into that plan. It grows tax-free. It can then be used and moved over to the institution. 529 allows you to put a lot more money away. In some states, Illinois is one of them, you do get a little bit of a tax break for putting those dollars away. You're restricted as to what you can buy. You do have different state plans that have, like your 401k, they have an aggressive plan, they have a balanced plan, more of an income plan, and you can adjust those as you go along. And then you can put money in the custodial account. Now, the drawback to the custodial account is that it becomes your child's money when they become of age. So if they decide not to go to college, that money is actually theirs. You really can't pull that back. Or you can put it in your own personal account and hold it aside and say, you know, that's the educational account. When you're going through the FAFSA, anything that's in the 529, that's in the Coverdell, that's in the custodial account counts as your child's money. And the institutions, the colleges look at that and say, well, most of that is ours, you know, because you're saving for college and here we are, we're college, so most of that is ours. If you have it in your own account or a joint account with your spouse, The colleges look at that and say, well, some of that is ours, a much lower percent, 2% or so. So actually, if you're looking at it, if you're looking at substantial dollars, it's probably better off to have it as your own asset as opposed to turning it over to your child in some form or another. And invest it yourself. It gives you also a lot more control. So, you know, a lot of people that we're talking to, kids 2, 3, 4 years old, and they're saving for college. And for whatever reason, the child, when they get to be 16 years old, says, you know, this college thing isn't for me. I'm going to go travel the world. Well, if you put it into those plans, you're kind of stuck. If you have it in your own personal account, you say, well, okay, that's fine. It's still our money. And then finally, 401k. All the 401k assets do not show up on the FAFSA. So any of the IRA retirement monies do not show up as assets in the FAFSA. So that's another way to hide money, if you will.
Yeah, the headline here being that you got to be very, very careful because the tax saving the moves you think are saving you taxes mm-hmm. could hurt your kids' chances for financial aid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what a lot of people do is say, you know, I've talked to some people where they have $200,000 put away in a 529 plan, and that essentially is going to take care of their kids' education. So for them to get financial aid, it's going to be very difficult to do that because those assets are going to be generally for the child's education. And when you're talking to colleges, you know, when in going through the process with my three girls, what we found is actually the further you sent your kid away from home, the better chance you got for financial aid because everybody's looking for check boxes. So you're from Illinois. Oh, we don't have anybody from Illinois. You're out in Oregon. Here's some money. You're studying art. We don't have anybody studying art from Illinois. Here's some money. So by going very local, going to U of I, going to Illinois schools, there may not be as much money as if they were to go to another state school or another institution further away. So there's a lot of different things to take a look at when you're doing it. And obviously the best time to get started on it is early on. You want to start when your child is generally under the age of 5, so it gives you the longest runway to put money away for your child, whether you do it in a joint account with your spouse, or you or mix it up with a 529 or Coverdell or what have you. Like anything else, you want to balance it out. You don't want to load it all up because you don't know what's going to happen, whether your child is going to college or not 15 years from now. So you want to make sure that you have the ability to pull those dollars back and use them for yourself. As opposed to having it all in your child's name.
Yeah, and if you're if you haven't been one of those people saving for a while for college for your kids and you do have 401k accounts, you can still pull money from those accounts to pay for college, can't you?
You can, and there's no penalty for that, and it goes directly to the institution. The drawback is you're taking away from your own retirement dollars, and your runway is a lot shorter than your child's runway. So you can say, well, you know, maybe we'll do student loans. And I do recommend student loans, but you want to do it in a fashion when your child graduates college that the student loan payment isn't so onerous that they really can't make it a go of it in whatever career they choose. So, again, you want to take a look at it from a balanced perspective and say, okay, how best do I go ahead and do this? I've got clients that, and we did it too with our kids, it came out of cash flow. We saved some money for them, but a lot of it came out of cash flow. They have student loans. They have some blood in the game. So that's an easy way to take a look at it.
All right, Paul, hang on with us. We're going to continue this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview in Chicago. Your money and investment questions as well, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. To get in your money and investment questions, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Paul, let's hit a couple of these. From the 312, question for Paul, how does one invest in emerging markets?
It's very easy. There's a lot of different funds that are out there, you know, exchange-traded funds, ETFs, actively managed funds. The biggest mutual fund is an ETF, EEM is the ticker symbol, Edward Mary. And you can get at it a lot of different ways. That one looks at the capital-weighted markets for all of the different stocks that are out in emerging markets. That would include China. That would include some of Europe, South America, Africa, etc. You can invest in specific countries. You can invest in Taiwan. You can invest in China. You can invest in Russia. And you can also have an active manager that will go out and take a look at those different companies, look at those different countries, and weight them. So we do like the emerging markets a lot right here. They've done very well just the last 3 months or so. We think they have a very long runway where they can do very well over the next 3 to 5 years. So EEM would be a good start, I think, for a lot of investors, but then you can get a little bit more specific. You can, they have plenty of funds that exclude other countries. They have some that are called frontier markets, and those are the very small markets. Saudi Arabia would be in there, different countries that are just now starting to get capital markets together. So there's a lot of different ways to do that, but those are probably the most popular way to do it.
What kind of returns are we talking about in emerging markets?
Emerging markets this year have lagged the S&P dramatically. They're up about 10%. The S&P is up about 20%. But if you look at them over the last year relative to the S&P 500, they're actually a little bit ahead of the S&P 500 versus a year ago, today versus a year ago. But their valuations are probably about 40% less than the U.S., and their growth prospects and their growth opportunities are much, much higher. So from a valuation perspective, they're pretty cheap at this point and have been for a while. They've underperformed for about 10 years or so. So we're starting to see signs at least where they're starting to do better. So again, it's a relative game. We think over the next 3 to 5 years, emerging markets would be performing better than the S&P 500.
Yesterday, we had a conversation at about this time about global climate change and investments related to that. And our guest told us that in the emerging markets over the next 10 or 15 years, 20 years, there will be upwards of $23 trillion in potential investments in climate-related things, so mm-hmm. clean energy, mm-hmm. Recycling, projects that are related to getting a handle on climate change. That's a huge amount of investment available.
It is, and you know, the hard part is trying to gauge that today, because there's going to be a big amount of spending that's going to go on to develop a lot of that, and it's going to be hard to say today, here are the winners for all of those. So part of the reason for us, when we take a look at the emerging market area, we like to have a very broad blanket over a lot of those emerging markets and try not to pick one of the winners or losers in that market. So we do like to have a very broad-based emerging market type of mutual fund that covers China, that covers South America, Africa, etc., because we don't know exactly where a lot of those opportunities are going to come up and how they're going to get funded. But if they're in those baskets, they'll get included in those funds.
Here's a question about 401ks, and this might be a good time to discuss this at the end of the year. If you're at a company that has moved 401ks from one provider to another mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and have left that other one just sort of hanging there so that you have to start another one, how do you handle that?
There's a couple things. One, you can leave it where it is. There's nothing wrong with that, and many companies are perfectly fine with that. But from a just an ease of understanding your own personal situation, we try to encourage our clients to consolidate. So if you've left ABC company and are now working for XYZ company, we will try to open up an IRA for you, roll over the 401k that's in the ABC company that you've left. And then if for some reason you leave XYZ at some point in the future, you can roll those assets over into the IRA. There's no tax implications. What it does is it gives you a broader base of opportunity to invest. In a 401k, you have the Chinese menu of items that you can choose from. But if you're in an IRA account, you can invest in individual stocks. You can invest in different mutual funds that may not be part of your 401k plan. So it gives you a much broader ability to diversify your portfolio. And again, it keeps things simple. It allows you then to have just one account that is all of your old 401ks. You'll still have your existing 401k as long as that's active. But at some point, then you have a place then to roll that if you decide to change in the future.
Yeah, and even though the money is still sitting there in that four, if you decide to do nothing with it, is it still earning money?
If you, yeah, if you leave your old 401k just as it is and you say, you know, it's too complicated, I don't want to do paperwork, it will stay invested as you had it when you left. So if you invested in an S&P 500 fund and a bond fund, it stays in that S&P fund and that bond fund. They don't sell it. It just... it's left alone. It is up to your discretion to do whatever you want to with it. It's still yours. You control it. So it stays invested as you had it. Where we run into problems is, of course, everybody, when they do their 401k, they start out and say, yep, check that box, never look at it again. And so you wind up with a very unbalanced account when you start taking a look at your overall asset allocation between stocks and bonds, because you set it up so many years ago and you've completely forgotten about it, and times have changed.
Are you spying on me? Because that sounds like you did my voice there. I don't feel like doing paperwork. That's...
it's a pain in the rear end to do it. Yeah. I get it. But ultimately, when you log on to your computer, you can go into your accounts and you can see your personal account, you can see your IRA account with one login, and you have, outside of your 401k, your financial life then, you know, easily at your fingertips.
Here's another question. Should I retire at 62 or 65 or keep working? What goes into
the
decision?
Yes. It really comes down to your assets and what is your lifestyle in retirement? How much money do you need? And how much do you have to draw on? Taking Social Security, obviously, the later you take Social Security, the more you get out of Social Security. Each year you wait, you get 8% more by waiting up until age 70, where you max out. If you have all your assets in 401k, realize that as I pull money out of that 401k or IRA account, I'm going to get taxed at ordinary income. If I have money in a personal account, joint account with my spouse, those assets that I pull out, I've already been taxed on. I may have to pay a little bit of capital gain tax, but it's going to be taxed very differently than what's in my IRA account. So really what it comes down to, the question I always ask is, you know, what's running through your checkbook on a regular basis? And if you hang it up today, can you still run that money through your checkbook with the assets that you have? Can you create enough money to continue that flow? If not, then you probably want to wait a little while and start to start or continue to sock away money to get to that level. 4% is a good target. So if you're saying, well, how much? 3-4% of your total asset base is probably a good target to say, okay, if I'm earning that much, here's how much money I'm earning off of those.
Thanks, Jay, for your question for that. So, Paul, as we wrap things up on the Friday edition here, we look at the markets. It looks like it's going to be a flat open. What's the play today? What do you like today?
You know, we've been dabbling a little bit more in some of the financials, some of the money center banks. They look very good at this point. Interest rates have stopped going down. The Fed is done. They're on the sidelines, and interest rates have done inverting, so the yield curve is now more normal. That tends to be a very good environment for the financials and banking stocks. As I mentioned earlier, emerging markets, international investing is very good. They've done well relative to the S&P 500. And we're starting to see finally a little bit of a shift away from some of the big tech growth names to a little bit more value. And that, again, is one of those trends that's been in place for 10 years where growth has killed value. We're starting to see that change here a little bit, too. So we may have a different dynamic come next year in the financial markets.
All right. Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue the conversation there.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming in. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview in Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, looks like it's going to be a flat to negative open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are flat, S&P and NASDAQ futures are negative. It's been a negative trading day in Europe so far, and in Asia, mostly negative as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Thank you very much. And as we take a look at the U.S.-China situation, which we have to do every day now, yesterday China bought 136,000 tons of U.S. soybeans as optimism about a trade deal between the world's two largest economies helped to boost global markets as well. The deal, that's about two cargoes worth of soybeans, was the first flash sale of U.S. agriculture products to China since November 1, and it comes as the Chinese Commerce Ministry said the two countries have agreed to cancel in phases the tariffs imposed during their months-long trade war. Weekly export data also showed that China booked its first deals for U.S. sorghum since August. The USDA requires exporters to report sales activity of 100,000 tons or more of one commodity made in one day. And USDA said in its report yesterday that export sales of soybeans to China totaled 956,300 tons in the week ended October 31st. That was a four-week high, and about 821,000 tons were shipped during that period. So that did bring some strength into the soybean market at the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday. The November soybean contract gained 10.5 cents a bushel, and the January contract up 8.75. However, on the other side, wheat down 4.5 cents, and December corn down 4 cents a bushel in the commodity trade at the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday. That's Ag Biz for this morning. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, thank you very much. Let's get an update now on the goings-on on Wall Street. Now this.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, despite internal squabbling in Washington over an agreement with Beijing to cancel U.S.-China tariffs in stages, investors left major stock indexes at record highs. The Dow Jones rose 182 points yesterday to a record 27,674. The S&P 500 gained 8 points to an all-time high of 3085. The NASDAQ composite added 24 points for its second highest close on record. Theme parks and the Lion King remake helped Disney roar past Wall Street expectations. Shares of the parent of ABC News rose more than 5% after earnings in the most recent quarter beat expectations. The numbers might have been stronger except that anti-government protests cut into visitor attendance at Hong Kong Disneyland. Gap is going back to its family roots. CEO Art Peck is out. Robert Fisher, son of the clothing company's founders, is taking over. Peck was named CEO in 2015, and since then, profits are down more than 20%. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
All right, a couple of more stories here from the business ticker before you leave. We leave you this morning. The city of New York is confirming plans to move the iconic Charging Bull statue from Manhattan's Bowling Green to a pedestrian plaza near the New York Stock Exchange. The City of New York says the move will give pedestrians more room and also eliminate the risk of visitors getting hit by cars after a recent change in the flow of traffic there. Disney's new streaming service, Disney Plus, will be available on Amazon Fire TV when it launches November 12th. Disney CEO says the two companies have finally reached a distribution deal. The companies had reportedly been quibbling over advertising disputes that threaten to keep Disney Plus off of those Amazon devices. Outgoing European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker says he does not think President Trump will impose the new tariffs on European automobiles, targeting European automobiles. Trump administration already has imposed tariffs that hit European steel, aluminum, and agricultural products. Is due to decide next week whether to impose tariffs on Europe's massive automobile exports. The previous tariffs had already provoked retaliation from the 28-country trade bloc. Honda has become the latest automaker to report weaker earnings as global demand softens. The company says its profit from the July to September quarter fell 6.7% from a year earlier to $196 billion. As vehicles and motorcycle sales slipped, Honda says an unfavorable exchange rate also hurt earnings. Honda's quarterly revenue declined 2.9% to about $34 billion U.S. as sales declined in the United States, Japan, and the rest of Asia and Europe. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Friday, November the 8th. The consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan out today. We'll see a report on wholesale trade. A couple of Fed speakers as well, including Mary Daly, John Williams, and Lil Brainard out on monetary policy and interest rates. On the earnings calendar today, Magma International, Duke Energy Corporation, Ameren Corporation, Entercom Communications, Enbridge, Diamond Rock Hospitality, and Jason Industries, some of the companies reporting quarterly earnings today. Some of the things that could move the markets on Friday, November the 8th.